supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. With so much of our time spent at work, and it does seem like more and more of our time is spent at work, it would only seem logical that our work should make us happy. It should be a source of joy and fulfillment. Well, many of us feel comfortable pursuing happiness and fulfillment with friendships, with romantic relationships, other parts of our lives, but we almost don't know what to expect from work. Is it a source of money? Is it something that feeds our ego? Is it just there to feed the family? Well, if you're brave enough to think about your career, if you're brave enough to think about whether you want or should make that switch and go for the career of your dreams, how do you know where to begin? How do you even know how to begin thinking about it? Well, today, we'll talk about how to find out what's right for you, when to make a change, if to make a change, and how to make that happen. You can call us at 888-477-9499 and talk with me and my guests about that. My guests are Dr. David Bluestein and Patricia Peterson. Bluestein is with the Lynch School of Education at Boston College. He's written The Psychology of Working. He also has a small private practice. He does organizational consulting. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really very excited about being on the program with you.
Thank you, David. And I'm also joined by an old friend, Pat Peterson. She's the Director of Career Services at the University of the Sciences here in Philadelphia. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm very, very excited about being here with you this afternoon.
And again, our phone number is 888-477-9499. Who knows, 54 minutes from now, I could have a whole new job. We'll see how this unfolds. David, let me start with you.
Yeah.
If I asked a grown-up 60 years ago why they work at all, the answer would be pretty simple. I work to feed my family and maybe send our kids to college. What about today's adults?
That's a great question. What I've been thinking about for much of my career is how privileged many of us are who can select the jobs and careers we want to get into. When we look back at our parents, our grandparents' generation, people worked primarily for survival. And if they were lucky, they had a job that had some dignity. They had a job that paid the salary that was reasonably comfortable for them. But the idea of working for fulfillment, of working to express oneself in the world, is a relatively recent phenomenon. And in my view, it's a great privilege in the world that those of us who can choose what we want to do are very, very fortunate.
It's a great privilege, but you know, we've done shows and there's a lot of research out now that shows choice raises anxiety.
Absolutely.
It adds to
it
our level
anxiety.
Of distress. So,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a privilege, but,
you right, know? It is. I mean, the reality is if people do have choice, they often can be overwhelmed by the options. They could experience career indecision. They could feel immobilized. The whole process of developing a career for those of us who do have this choice is often characterized by anxiety and by some tension. It could be a very complicated process.
And it affects our expectations.
Absolutely.
Of our jobs, of ourselves.
It does. It affects our expectations and it affects our family life. Absolutely. The process of making a career choice is one of the most daunting challenges that young people face and indeed adults face because the world of work is shifting so rapidly right now. The one constant, and I know this is a bit of a cliche, but the one constant is change.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to help our clients prepare for, is a world of incredible change.
Pat, one of the reasons we work is for identity these days, and the other is for social connection, yes?
Yes, Dan. I have found, working with my students and the alumni and others, that what people do gives them a sense of self. And I have found in my travels, both here and abroad, that I found when you go abroad and you meet people, 9 times out of 10, they don't ask you what you do. They want to know who you are. But I've not been anywhere yet where people say, well, what do you do? Here in the United States, I find...
First question.
...that people say, oh, what do you do? Where do you work? And so, of course, the students and the alumni that I work with and others, when they come in and speak to me, they say, I want to do something that's going to make me very successful so I can get to know people and I can make the right connections. And I have found in my career that over the years, that our identity, again, is who we are in terms of our occupation.
I also wonder about the issue with social connection. I mean, the seminal work by Putnam about bowling alone. You know, we are losing our mm-hmm. social connection. David, I think you addressed this. We're losing our social connections in the community, and the whole definition of community is almost not there anymore. We don't have a sense of community.
So, that's a David, very good point.
Are we looking to work to replace that, and is it successful?
Well, that's a great question, and that's something I've been thinking about for years. At its best, work gives us a sense of connection to the world, and even for folks who are doing work that isn't intrinsically interesting or doesn't fulfill their interests or values, work often provides a place for them to feel connected. Let me, if I can, speak about my mom. My mom, who's 87 now, and worked in a department store in Queens. And she used to say that work was, that she didn't have a glamorous job, but she felt incredibly connected to the community through her job. In fact, down in Florida, she would see people she knew 20 and 30 years later. And it gave her a great sense of connection to the community, and I think that was very, very important. And I do think, kind of following up on Putnam's work and others, that as we become more of a transient society and we move around more, work does provide us with a sense of connection. I think the problem is for people whose work doesn't provide a lot of connection, that's often a struggle. Right. And also we see difficulties with people having interpersonal conflicts at work. So there's a whole host of issues that are related to that.
Well, wait a minute. Let me follow up that. Work provides us a sense of connection, but I read years ago a study from HUD, I think, that said 3 out of 5 people move every 5 years. I would imagine, I mean, what's the average life expectancy of a job? So, you have connections, but do you develop deep roots like your mom did?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think what it suggests is that as we're educating children, as we're helping young people to prepare for the workforce, we need to help them develop really good social skills. Mm. This needs to be part of the educational process because people are going to need to learn how to develop friendships, to develop connections as they move around. And I think it's essential to psychological health to have connection. Right. And I'm sure I know in your work, Dan, I've looked over some of your work, you've said it, you've talked about this, and many other mental health professionals have talked about this too. It's, we need relationships as we need air to breathe.
It's everything, right. Pat, I know you talk about this also. You talk about what's critical is having interpersonal skills, handling interpersonal dynamics at work. Almost as important, if not more important, than one's technical skills. But what if someone doesn't have it? Could it be learned?
Yes, in my experience, I've managed 3 different career services centers around the country, and 2 were quite large. Another one was small, and I had a staff of individuals that worked with me. And I found that there were some individuals that didn't have very good interpersonal skills, and that's where management comes in. When people go into jobs, what happens now, in my opinion, is that a lot of managers, because of pressure to produce, don't always have the time to help their employees with their own interpersonal skills and how to actually help them. So while they're also making a contribution to the organization, they're also developing themselves professionally. And this is something that we try to teach our students at the university where I'm presently employed, that you've also got to have solid interpersonal skills in order to succeed. Because once you get the job, you've got to keep the job.
How do you get them if you don't have them?
Well, what we do at the university, we have various workshops, and we bring in individuals who teach the students and soon-to-be graduates, if you will, about interpersonal skills, what's expected in the workplace, how you make a contribution, things that you and I would take for granted. Very much, for example, like coming to work on time, saying good morning to people, being part of a team. That's all part of developing interpersonal skills. And if I may, I just wanted to say one thing that David mentioned about developing these relationships. And I'd like to add to that, you've also got to teach our young people how to maintain these connections, that when you go into a position in another part of the country, and if you leave, you want to maintain some of those relationships.
Right.
I want to go to the talk about a young man who recently wrote an article, and that I thought was really interesting. He's a very young man. His name is Sean Colt. And he's going to be he's going to be a senior at St. Joseph's University. And he's studying English with a concentration in journalism. Let's see if we've got him on the line. Sean, do we have you?
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So tell us about when your thoughts about your career started, because most of my friends, when I went to college, started thinking about their career towards the end, second half of their senior year.
Yeah.
So when did you start thinking about your career?
Right when I got to St. Joe's, I knew that I definitely had an interest in journalism. So I just signed up to write for our newspaper, The Hawk. And I covered sports, just real basic stuff as a freshman, and eventually got promoted to be an assistant editor, and now I'm the news editor actually for the paper. So that sort of just grew on itself.
So, what's the career you're pursuing, and what are you doing to go
on? I think I'd like to be a journalist. Obviously, I write for the Inquirer every once in a while on the op-ed page. I'm actually from the Washington area, so a few semesters ago, I actually was down here, and I wrote for the Washington Times for a few months. So, I've had some experience with journalism. I really like that, and we'll see where that takes me.
So you've been working, interning, for quite a while.
Yeah. I've been interning.
That was the gist of your article.
Right. And during the summers, and then also during some of the semesters in college, I've also worked in Philadelphia and Washington. So, yeah, I've been pretty busy.
So your devotion to your career really started pretty early in your college.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was... I wanted to find out if I really did like it. You know, I'd always thought, hey, it would be great to write for a newspaper, and I thought, you know, I may as well give it a shot, learn some of the tricks of the trade, and meet people that could help me out down the road.
Tell me, I got two questions for you. I want to know your wishes, and I want to know your expectations of your career. First, tell me your wish.
I'm actually this summer. I'm interning for a congressman down here in Washington, but I'd really like to mix that sort of with my journalism background. That my wishes are to cover politics in Washington. I think that'd be
my goal.
And what are your expectations? What do you think?
My expectations are that it'll be very tough. You know, being a journalism student, you know, you hear all the time, you know, newspapers are cutting down on jobs. It's difficult to get in at newspapers and television stations, so on and so forth. But I've met some people, and I've done a lot of, you know, I have a lot of experience. So hopefully, I think it's mostly about getting in at that first job and doing your best and seeing where it can take you.
Well, that's great. Sean, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Sean Coit is going to be a senior at St. Joseph University. He's studying English. He wants to be a journalist, and let's hope we hear from him in the future. Pat, what is realistic for somebody to expect coming out of college?
What's realistic to expect coming out of college? That a new graduate can become gainfully employed, but they have to be proactive in their job search. They also have to understand the different work environments, nonprofit, education, government, and corporate. Each one of those environments offers job opportunities. And we try to teach our students that when they are looking for jobs, they need to define for themselves where they think they may best fit. And a lot of the students have not thought about that until they're actually ready to graduate. But students come in to me every day and say, Mrs. Peterson, there just aren't any jobs out there. And we start working on the internet, and we even look at print media. And the students will say...
Why did you say it that way? We even look at print media?
Because nowadays, when the students come in, they'll say, well, the newspaper? And I'll say, absolutely, because I'm of that generation that grew up with the newspapers. And in fact, today I still have to read a couple of papers a day. And I tell them this is also part of the job search.
Today's economy is not good. The employment market is not good. So how does that affect graduates' expectations? And I'm also comparing today's graduates with their parents' lives and the kind of people that David described in the beginning of the program, how lucky we are,
yes,
and how well they did and are doing. Their children can't expect that, or do they?
Well, I find that parents have very high expectations of their children. And even now, with a down economy, parents still have very, very high expectations. They want their children to do better than what they've done.
Well,
and
what about their children?
And the students come in, and or soon-to-be graduates, and say, I just want to get a first opportunity. I just want to get something so I can start developing what we say, a track record. Because there are other options. They may opt to work for a year or two and then go on to graduate school. Looking at volunteer types of opportunities, like the Peace Corps. There's also Job Corps, where they take new graduates who want to work with students who are in high school. There's teaching. I mean, there are lots of opportunities.
There are a lot of options.
But I find that the students simply are not aware of these opportunities.
Well, when I come back, I want to talk about our expectations and how that affects our level of happiness. I also want to talk about what happens to students when they get into a career and find that it's the wrong career, and then the next generation. How many of us know people? I mean, the job satisfaction rate is not very high. What do you do when you're 10, 15, 20 years into a career and find you're unhappy? So, you know, I want to talk about all those issues, and that's what we're talking about today on Voices in the Family. We're talking about career issues. How do we know what's right for us? When are the expectations reasonable and not? When is it time to change careers? And when it's time, how do we do it? My guests are Dr. David Bluestein, who is with the Lynch School for education at Boston College. He also does organizational consulting on career issues. I'm here in the studio with Pat Peterson. She's Director of Career Services at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. For those of you who are holding on the phone, I promise you we will get to your phone calls right after our break. Promise, promise. And again, the number, though, is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
On one fateful night in 1938, thousands of men and women ran from their homes convinced that Martians were invading. All because of a radio play.
But there is one thing we must not overlook. All this took place in 1938, in a less sophisticated yesteryear.
Okay, were we really so unsophisticated back then? Could the War of the Worlds happen again? Here's a hint, yes. We'll find out on the next Radio Lab, where we'll come to you.
Live at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about career issues for the over 50% of us who are unhappy with our careers. We're talking about how to change our level of happiness, maybe how to change our careers. When's the time and when it is time? How do we do it? My guests are Pat Peterson, who's Director of Career Services at the University of Sciences here in Philadelphia, and Dr. David Bluestein. He's with the Lynch School of Education in Boston College. He's written The Psychology of Working. Well, what happens now if a graduate comes out of school, has chosen their career, it looks wonderful, and after a short period of time, they feel it's the wrong career? One of my co-producers, Lisa Walters, spoke with 23-year-old Andrea Reich, who graduated Temple in 2006 with her degree in journalism. After only a few short months in her field, she decided it wasn't the right field for her. Let's listen.
So you get a job after you graduated college. Tell me about the job.
I got a job as an associate editor at just a small local children's parenting magazine in South Jersey. And I began working, I graduated in May and began working in June. I did a lot of data entry. It was a lot of listings in the magazine of activities for parents to take their children to. And that was my main, the main part of my job, which was very, very entry level and just not interesting and not what I went to school for. In journalism, they teach you really do start at the bottom and have to work your way up. But I wasn't doing a lot of article writing, which is what I love about journalism. I love writing. So I was kind of disappointed.
What was it like going to work every day?
I hated my life. there was days when there was just honestly nothing for me to do, and which is, you know, I had a lot of idle time to research other things and do just other things while I was at work.
So where did that extra research lead you?
It led me to researching other fields, mainly in medicine.
Where are you now?
Right now, I am a medical assistant at a dermatology office, and I am finishing up my second year of taking prereqs to apply to physician assistant programs in the fall.
Are you happy with the decision that you made, or do you feel like you would have liked to make another go at your journalism career?
I am very happy. I really love my job. Having no experience at all prior to this in medicine at all, other than, you know, just, you know, I would read a lot of articles about medicine, and that's how I sort of got into it, and I found it was something that it's always changing. It's always, you can never learn everything about it. So really putting that to test and seeing patients and being there, I realize I've really made the right choice. Like every day, I really do love my job and my classes. So I've been working full time and taking classes, at least one or two classes a semester since I've graduated. And I really think this is the right decision. And I'm, I don't know. I often think that maybe I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't be in the position that I am right now if I hadn't had that first job with all that idle time that I could just research. That, you know, if it wasn't so boring and interesting, I might still be in trying to make it in journalism. And that might have been, maybe that would be the right decision, but I really feel like this is the right decision for me.
That was our producer, Lisa Walters, talking with 23-year-old Andrea Reich, who changed her life after she decided it didn't work for her. David, let me turn to you. I have a confession to make. That, and I'm embarrassed to say, if that were my daughter, I might have said the wrong thing to her. No. I would have said the wrong thing to her. I would have said what old people say to young people, you know, stick it out, have patience, see if you like it, so on and so forth. What would you have said if that were your daughter?
Well, with my daughter, I think I would have, first of all, I admire what she's done. She's incredibly resourceful, and I would have encouraged her to explore new areas.
So how do you know? But how do you know when you know, you're just being impatient and you need to stick with it to learn your skill better? And how do you know when
it's
time?
She said something in there that was really revealing to me, which is that she really was unhappy. You know, sometimes I'll ask clients, you know, what is it like on Sunday nights for you when you think of going back to work? I think many of us remember the Sunday night blues, you know, when we I know many of, you know, jobs we've had when we were younger that were hardly exciting. I worked in warehouses and things like this. You know, the Sunday night blues, and to ask people how bad that feeling is. I think she was able to really touch it very, very intensely, how sad she felt.
And I remember most heart attacks take place on Sunday nights, don't they?
That's right. So I think what she was able to do was, she was a very resourceful woman, and I really admire her a lot. And were she my daughter, I would encourage her to continue exploring. And the reality is, for many people in our country, in our communities, there's a period of time that a pretty well-known psychologist, Jeffrey Arnett, calls emerging adulthood. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that the period of exploration is now going beyond the late teens and early 20s, well into the 20s, to the later 20s. This is emblematic of living in, you know, post-industrial societies and information technology societies, where people do have more of an opportunity to continue exploring. So I really admire what she's done.
Yeah.
In the same vein, if we could just talk about Sean, the young man who called earlier, he presented a different track. He kind of figured out what he wanted to do, and he stuck with it, but he really had a passion. He has a passion for it.
And
the key element in both of those stories, I think, is exploration. I've written a lot about exploration. I'm sure Pat has thought about this a lot in her work as well, that it's really important for people to explore, and explore both systematically, but also lead what I call an exploratory life, where they're always keeping themselves open to the world.
On a level of career, on a level of mental health, and on a level of spiritual health.
All of it.
We need to have the faith to leave what is familiar.
Right.
And it's always an act of faith. Let's hear another take on this career issues. We'll go to the phones. We've got Mark on the phone. Mark?
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment. I'm a 40-something analytical chemist, and I've been working in related in the pharmaceutical field for a number of years. And in 2005, I was having a lot of problems at with my job. I had the Monday morning blues, so to speak, as the doctor said. I hated getting up in the morning to go to my job. I was having health problems, and I just hated it. And up until that point, I really loved doing what I was doing. I enjoyed doing the work and just loved it. And it got to the point where I actually resigned from the company I was working from. And when my benefit ran out, I got an unemployment, been fired from a company, went back to a company, and things just weren't working out. And I'm currently working for a small research and development company that's doing some drug development, they're doing work in proteins, and I'm part-time, and I was able to get that zeal for my work back again, because a combination of a friend works there and his supervisor they're just very open, and the pressure is such that they didn't expect me to come right in and be able to handle all the tasks that they had, but that it just revitalized me. And I think that's also part of it, is that, you know, the supervisors you have and their expectations, and yeah, I have a lot of experience, but they didn't expect me to know everything they did right away, and that really just helped me out a lot to get my zeal back for analytical chemistry and pharmaceuticals and that kind of stuff, because I was really down on myself, and I didn't want to do this anymore. In fact, I thought about, you know, getting a job as a bag boy at the local grocery store.
That's a fabulous story, and in the middle of the story, you struck a chord for Pat Peterson. Let's hear. You reacted when he said the word supervisor, and thanks so much for your call, Mark.
Yes, I was listening to Mark, and when he said the supervisors were very supportive, they didn't expect him to come in immediately, hit the ground running, and supervision has a lot to do with how a person succeeds, I believe, in their jobs. And it's not just about showing up, doing the job. It's also about the interest that you take in the people who work with you. I've been doing this for 34 years, and I have always said, people do not work for me, they work with me. And I believe that that is a way that you actually have people feel like they're part of a team, and they will do the job. And so Mark has a wonderful story, and I hope others are listening to that, because he was totally, his synergy came back.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
Yes, absolutely. What a great story.
It sure was. I want to shift gears just a little bit with you, David.
Yes.
I guess one clinician to the other. I see people come to me for different reasons than they come to you, and I see a lot of people who are unhappy on their job, and it's tough for me to ferret out, because when I see unhappiness, a lot of the unhappiness I see is a clinical depression, or at least a dysthymia, and how do I ferret out what role the job plays on that? And sometimes it doesn't play a role at all. It's the depression.
That's a great question. That's a question that, again, I've thought a lot about. I'm a counseling psychologist, and I'm trained to do both therapy as well as career development and career counseling. And I've written about this in my book, actually. This is a case where that old Freudian adage of sometimes a cigar is just a cigar is useful. It's at times when a person comes in depressed, of course we have to do a clinical assessment and assess the nature of the depression. As you and I both know, and many of our listeners know, that there are different pathways to depression. It could be through trauma, it could be through biological predisposition, and it also could be through a lot of psychological pain at work. There's a really interesting body of knowledge about loss of work, unemployment being associated with a rise in mental health problems. So I think there's different pathways to depression. I think that when someone comes to see me and they're depressed, I would always assess the depression, and, of course, if they might be a candidate for medication, refer them to a psychiatrist for that, to discuss that, but also to look at different ways in which the person can regain an optimal level of functioning. One of the things that I like to do in my work, and in my work I do combine therapy with career counseling for those clients who need it, is if the person has some strengths at work and they're struggling in their relational life, I might want to help them build up some of their areas of strength.
So
that they can feel more self-efficacious, feel more confident, and feel alive again. And that's a really powerful way of working. I think the way that those of us who have some background in career development can help in these ways is to also do some career assessment. Maybe the part of the depression is related to being in a poor-fitting work environment.
Well, you know, we know from Seligman's work that, you know, a major part of depression is sustained, learned helplessness.
That's right.
And often the workplace is just that. It's sustained helplessness. Pat?
Yes, I found that people will often come into our office and use career services when they have other issues. And we immediately refer them to the university's counseling center because we tell them that there are other issues that they need to work through before they can actually really begin to think about a career choice. And this has worked very well. We are not psychologists here in Career Services like you and David. However, having been in the field for such a long time, immediately when people come in, I can tell they need to be referred.
Let's see if we can get another phone call on before our break. We'll talk with Eileen. Eileen?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I am intrigued with what you guys are all talking about. I'm in a little different situation. I am transitioning from pretty much being focused on my kids, and now I'm looking at trying to develop sort of a second career. I always worked, but it was more whatever worked around my kids' schedules. I worked in actually in special ed, but part-time and for myself. So about a year ago, I stopped doing that because I was working alone, like you guys had talked about, doing kind of intense work in people's homes, and I left that to just investigate what do I really want to do. And I'm just feeling, like you guys had spoken about, really overwhelmed with all the choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm spending a lot of time in exploration and trying not to put a lot of pressure on myself. And financially, I can look, but I'm just wondering, you know, do you guys work with people that are in these kinds of transitions, and do you have any suggestions as to where to go with it?
I will bet between my two guests the answer is yes, and lots of suggestions. So
okay.
We'll start with Pat Peterson.
The first thing that I would suggest that you consider doing is there's a wonderful website. It's called jobhunt.org, www.job-hunt.org. You go into that website, and I don't know where you live, but that website has a lot of geographical information as far as organizations that could actually begin to help you make these choices. Now, you do not say that much about your educational experience or your background. If you graduated from a university or college here locally, you can call them and they will see you if you would like to begin there, and they too can help you with options.
Let's turn to David.
Yes, I have a few thoughts as well. I
want to know how Eileen begins. I mean, it's like you said about choice. There's a whole world open to her. How does she begin to think about what she wants?
Well, I do think that to kind of follow it up on Pat's point, I think talking to a trained career counselor could help. And I think Pat's idea of going to the alumni services of a career services center would help. In the past, we've had various career services available in different communities. I'm in the Boston area. We do have some inexpensive career service options. I imagine in Philadelphia you do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Another option is through the Department of Labor's ONET website. I'm sure Pat knows about this.
What is it?
It's called the ONET. It's O*NET. And it actually took over from what was developed in the 1930s, the Dictionary of Occupational mm-hmm. Titles. And what it is, it's actually a huge website, which is free to everybody in the United States, of extensive information about careers and occupations. It also includes some self-administered assessment tools, including an interest assessment, a values assessment, and a self-estimated abilities assessment. I do offer that with some caution and caveats that there are ways in which assessments can be helpful. There's ways in which assessments can also, unfortunately, stereotype people by gender or race and ethnicity. So I would urge our caller to consider doing this with a career counselor.
Well, this is going to be the epitome of arrogance, since I know almost nothing about career counseling. But my instinct would be to start on the inside rather than the outside when one thinks about their lives, their passion, and career.
I think you're absolutely
to
right.
To start at the heart.
The way that I would work is asking a person to talk about themselves in a narrative way.
Yeah.
Tell me about your life story. Tell me what gives you passion, what gives you joy, what do you love to do? And that is exactly how I would begin, is really to explore inside. And that's, in some ways, the best career counseling is really like any other counseling. It's an exploration of one's soul, one's heart, and one's values.
Mm. Well, Eileen, I hope that was helpful. We're gonna have to take a short break. You got lots of information there, and I wish you the best with your new career. We're talking about career issues, career counseling, when it's time to make a change, how to make the change, or even if it's time to make a change. My guests are Dr. David Bluestein. He's with the Lynn School of Education at Boston College. He's written The Psychology of Working. My other guest here in the studio is Patricia Peterson. She's Director of Career Services at the University of Sciences in Philadelphia. She's been in this field for 30 years, I'll bet. She's seen a lot of changes over those 30 years. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna
A revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific is currently on Broadway. On the next Fresh Air, singer Kelly O'Hara tells us about bringing fresh interpretations to well-known songs. And we visit with Jenji Kohan, creator of the Showtime series Weeds. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Between Morning Edition
and All Things Considered,
we bring you day to day
news, interviews.
If they get to me and they kill me, I can always leave something behind.
And features you won't hear anywhere else.
It's good radio in the middle of the day.
Day to day from NPR News.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about careers. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Is it time to make a break? What's involved in making that break? What's involved in taking that leap of faith? My guests are Pat Peterson, Director of Career Services at the University of Sciences in Philadelphia, and Dr. David Bluestein at the Lynn School of Education at Boston College has written The Psychology of Working. Well, let's go back to Elisa Walters and her interview. She spoke with a woman who spent the last 10 years working in television, and after gradually establishing herself in freelance writing, public relations, and consulting, she decided to leave her career, her TV career, altogether.
I am on the verge of changing my career completely. I realized for myself that my time in TV is up for now. And for the past 7-8 months, I've been working in PR, media consulting, and freelance writing. And the opportunity presented itself. I've been able to work something out that I could actually do that. And so it's the next chapter.
How has the transition been from moving from television into a completely new career?
It's hard because I started my own company to do the freelance stuff. I'm now subcontracted, so I don't have benefits. I don't have 401k. In this economy right now, it's a big, big risk for me. However, I feel like it's something I have to do.
If you could offer somebody advice who is looking to change careers right now, what would it be?
I guess really you have to look at your life. Where are you right now? Are you in a position that you could do it? Because my whole thing is, I never want to look back and say, what if?
So that was the wisdom of a 30-something-year-old woman who's been working 10 years in television and just took the leap and switched careers. So, Pat, that kind of wisdom, I never want to look back and say, what if? You agree with that?
Absolutely. I tell students, think about, I could have, I should have, but I didn't. And follow your dreams, do your research, find out who you are. And I just want, as going back to Eileen very, very quickly and related to your question, is I would also say whatever you decide to do in your career, don't let anyone say to you, oh, why do you want to do that? That's crazy. Because this is what you've decided, and you must feel good about what you're going to do.
All right. Let me ask a concrete question, and I'll go back to you, David.
Yes.
Let's say I come to you, and I'm a 45-year-old guy. I've got two teenage kids and a wife. I've got kids looking at college, and I am miserable with mm-hmm. my career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every instinct in me as a father is going to say, well, tough it out. I mean, you got a couple of kids going to college. You're not going to replace that income. How would you help me?
Well, actually, a few things. One is there are reality issues. The person, the client would need to keep his income up and keep the money coming in. It doesn't mean that the person couldn't find something new to do. One of the things that we do, and I'm sure Pat does this also, is to do a transferable skills assessment, which is a narrative tool trying to help a person identify what their skills are and help them look at areas where those skills will be marketable. There could be ways of shifting jobs so that the person could find within the same career, so the person might find a better fit in terms of the interpersonal climate. And there's also ways of making more extensive shifts. The other thing, and if that's not possible, the other thing to do is to kind of develop a long-term plan, which is to help the person at least dream of a future that's better and have the person start planning for it now, maybe doing some retraining, retooling, so that they could at least think about things getting better. Hmm. As you know from your work and past work, hope is so important in life, and we have to help our clients feel some hopefulness.
Hmm. Pat?
Can I just put one plug in for an issue in terms of moving careers, that it's more of a political issue, that I think one thing that really inhibits people from making the changes is the lack of national health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I do believe that our economy will take off once we have national health insurance, because I think people, we're really inhibiting the creativity of our workforce by making it harder for people to try new things.
Boy, isn't that interesting? I never thought of that as
that's
a huge issue.
Yeah,
and it really keeps
our
economy really limited in relation to globalization.
Huh.
Because many people I work with now who come in and say, I'm not really happy, they don't want to leave simply because they do have that health insurance.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got, I'm afraid I'm going to screw up your name, Erastus?
Yes.
Hi, did I get your name right?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Huh. Boy, good for me. Well, how can we help you?
Yeah, very good discussion. And for me, what I wanted to find out is, I have a dual degree in international relations and sociology, and I've been out of college for 3 years. And in those 3 years, I've worked with the state of Delaware, where I live currently, running AmeriCorps programs. But my biggest ambition has always been to do international projects, and I have done, as a volunteer project manager, different projects in Kenya, where I come from water projects, health clinics, and currently actually working on a youth entrepreneurship center, which I initiated through a nonprofit organization where I volunteer in as the president and project manager. Now, how do I connect my community service experience, volunteer work experience that I've had over about 8 years, so that when I go out to apply for a job or when I see a job that I fit me, an employer could see that and say, wow, this is somebody that likes to bring
that's a great question. I'm going to ask you to take it off of air because we're running low on time. Pat, do you want to?
Very quickly, not knowing your educational background again, I would recommend that you Google. There are many, many organizations related to international that could certainly utilize your community experience and your international background. One, for example, the World Health Organization, for the United Nations. These organizations, they have fabulous websites, and they have jobs. In addition to that, There is the American, the Public Health Association, and they have international job listings. This is, I'm speaking very quickly, but this is just the beginning. Do the research and don't give up. There are many, many opportunities out there. There's one website, www.indeed.com. Go on to that, plug in what you're interested in, and you'll see a lot of options come up. It's a great website.
What is that? What kind of website is it?
It's Indeed is a website where it lists many different types of job opportunities all over the United States in various work environments. And he's looking for international, so he would plug in international health or international community service. There's also another fabulous, very quickly, website, idealist.org, where they have many, many opportunities for people like this gentleman who've worked in the community and have an international background.
So let me, David, I'm going to ask an unfair question of you half a minute we have left. How does someone do this on their own if they don't have a career counselor?
Well, I think that there's a lot of very good self-help books out there. There's the classic book, What College or Parachute, by Richard Bowles. And I think also the website, the ONET website has some good guidance in it. I do think that it's possible to get good career counseling also, and to find licensed mental health counselors, professional counselors who have background in career counseling or counseling psychologists. Often one can get career counseling. Also to check out with the local job service. Here we call them one-stop career centers. That could help a lot. And I just want to add one more thing that I've always told my clients, and I'm sure Pat has this idea as well. People shouldn't give up, as she said. You have to remember you're only looking for one job. People can say, don't go into this field, there's no jobs. You're not looking for 20,000 jobs. You're looking for one job.
Good. That's great advice, and that's kind of a theme I've been hearing. I want to thank you both so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I really enjoyed this a lot.
I did, too, and thank you so much for having me.
Dr. David Bluestein is with the Lynch School of Education at Boston College. He's written The Psychology of Working. Pat Peterson is the Director of Career Services at the University of Sciences in Philadelphia. This Friday, June 20th, I'll be talking about balancing compassion for self and others at the New Jersey Center for Family Services. If you want to find more about what I'm up to, check out my website, drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Bob Perdick. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Voices in the Family is co-produced by Elisa Walters and Gita Simons. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends. Kimmel's